You're listening to the Collab Talk podcast, episode 256 of the MVP Buzz Chat series. In this episode, I'm talking with Azure MVP James Cook. Hey, everybody, it's Christian Buckley doing another MVP Buzz Chat. I'm talking today with James. Hello.
Hello there.
So for folks that don't know you, James, who are you, where are you, and what do you do?
So I am Director of Development Operations at Coyote Software. I am based in United Kingdom in London. My role is responsibility of platform engineering, development operations, SRE, and also automating testing. My day-to-day is pretty much anything, operational, making developers' lives easier, empowering developers. As part of that, I'm a Microsoft MVP, HashiCorp Ambassador, and a Microsoft Certified Trainer, as well as hold many certifications in Microsoft and other areas. So I'm a big advocate in the community.
You're in that world of the certifications. I just saw one of your countrymen, Sarah Fenna, had her page of her certifications around that. Like, that's a full-time job keeping up with each of those things. But more power to you there. Well, it's interesting. So you're an Azure MVP.
Yes.
With Microsoft kind of shifting back to a more granular focus, I started as a SharePoint MVP. I'm on my fifth or sixth rewrite of that, or bucket that they've put us in for that MVP. And suddenly I see somebody got a brand new MVP this month as a SharePoint MVP. Like, there's a PowerPoint MVP. There's like, they're again doing that, naming the specific technology that they're really focused on. So if that were the case, if it were more granular, what specifically would you be focused in, like on DevOps side of things, or is there a particular technology that you gravitate towards?
Yeah, it would be more focused on DevOps. Yeah, when we go through highlighting our contributions over the year, it's very hard for, I would imagine, Microsoft, when I am listing items where I'm talking about Azure, but working on things like Terraform and in that same bracket of that content. So when I'm listing it, it's like, oh, it's a developer content as well as an Azure content, but it's that middle ground where it's DevOps, and that's where if it's going to become that much more identified MVP status, I would imagine that DevOps would be that area expertise that I fall into.
Well, it's amazing how much that space has evolved, because when I was years ago, actually prior to joining the Microsoft ecosystem, and I worked in IT teams and a number of startups and some big companies, and DevOps was not a phrase that was out there. We did SEM, the source code management, worked with engineers and giving them the tools. I was in the project portfolio management side of things, not quite in the DevOps space, but again, I was managing what engineers were doing as well as what the PMs and business analysts were doing as well, as far as the tools. What's been your primary topics that you've been talking about, speaking on, writing about? In fact, what are your primary contribution types? Are you more comfortable writing or videos?
So over the last few years, it's all writing. I have a very detailed blog that I usually at least contribute once a month to, at least. But this year, I have pushed myself to doing YouTube content. So over the last couple of weeks, I've been releasing at least two videos a week. So that's my target now, to do that, as well as continuing the blog writing as well. So it's one of those things that I'm trying to show the tech side of things, how for me, I find doing DevOps is quite easy. But when I talk to people and I explain how I feel something's so easy to do, people go, I didn't know that, or that's quite difficult for me. And I found out from going to other organizations and talking to them is actually the same just the same statement. I don't know if we're doing DevOps right or if our DevOps is successful. And these are the, like, what I'm trying to create content for is, oh, I've done this. Have a look at what I've done. And I get a lot of feedback here from people going, oh, this saved me hours. Oh, this has helped me in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And we say, like, DevOps is not all about tech. And this is one of the things we say to execs here. It's not, oh, yeah, you can buy a DevOps product and go, okay, now you're doing DevOps. It's not. It's the culture side of things as well. And again, that's what I'm trying to advocate, especially this year. I'm doing a few talks on effective leadership and also successful development operations, trying to get across here that culture is a very primary thing that you need to ingrain, but you also need to have the culture and the technology. It's not just the tech. It's not about the culture. It's both together, and you have to do that and get everybody on board.
So yeah, I have got a very similar topic, again, coming more from the project portfolio management side, where I would talk about change management. Again, it's very much fits within this space. And it's not, you're right, it's not just about the tools, because you could have 10 companies with a project management software package, and they could use it 10 different ways. They can be, in fact, I was just talking with a partner about creating features for a chargeback model. For those that have ever attempted to do that, I've worked with a couple of companies where we've attempted to do that, where you attempt to put pricing around, like, your internal IT services, so that you can allot budget that each business unit spends on IT, that kind of thing. Again, it could be very different between different organizations, and culturally, the organization's ability to do those, you know, take those, follow that methodology, follow the, you know, utilize those tools to their fullest extent. So yeah, it's the soft skill side of operations and engineering.
Yeah. And this is where I find when I'm having conversations is trying to find the right, person, which I say it's not an individual thing. You usually need an advocate in a company yet, and to make anything successful, especially DevOps, but trying to find the middle ground between someone that has the soft skills and also the very technical skills, and getting someone in the middle that can do both. And yep, this is where I try advocating that you need to, sometimes you can find someone very technical and train them up, yeah, with the soft skills, yeah, and build them towards that middle ground, yeah, then your soft skills, yeah, is quite good, yeah, to then build them up to the technical. And that's what I try doing, is trying to bring that middle ground to organizations, so that we can not have one person in an organization that can advocate it all and deliver it all, but all have multiple people that can bring all that together and all work as a team as well. And that's what the DevOps culture is all about, that yep, type of approach. So
well, that's what's, again, it's very similar over on, you know, the PMBA side. You know, it's what business analysts do. They're usually the people that understand the technology. They may not be able to code. They're not the engineers, but they understand it and they communicate what they can, translate business into technical and technical over to the business folks. You also, something else that you said about, you know, people coming up and you know, things that might be easy for you. I think one of the things that I remind, you know, MVPs about, talk about often, is the fact you can't forget those kind of entry level topics, because although you've mastered them and moved on, and sometimes it's more exciting to talk about the new cool features and tools, there's always people that are just at the beginning of their journeys and need that other fundamental content.
Yeah, and that is literally what most conversations are. Once you've done it, what I find is once I've done it, I move on to the next thing and more complicated. Yeah, I don't forget it, but then I take advantage that I know it now. I have that information, but organizations are quite still far behind in this type of journey. Some organizations, like startups, might not take the correct journey in regards to taking a development operational approach. And because of that, they then find themselves catching up, yeah, with that curve. So even though you think a company's mature, they might be mature in regards to their growth, but not in their actual operational culture. And having that conversation, like you say, you're going back to the basics, seems to be quite a common approach I find when I go to an organization, I usually find it more interesting going into an organization where there's a lot of work to do. I would like to say, I mean, if I got bored, I think I'll move on. To be honest, I like the interest of constantly doing work in finding something challenging. And when I do find an organization but where there needs a lot of work, need doing, that's interests me. But usually you have to start with, I usually say it's the foundation. My father-in-law and my wife's side of the family, it's all construction. They do sometimes, it's either general trade, plumbing, all that. So when I talk to them, they always talk about construction. So I've started using the terminology that when we talk about building, if we look at a structure, it's usually easier just to tear down the structure and rebuild it again. So the easiest way to do it is to start with a new foundation and build up from there. Trying to work with a falling structure, it's a lot of work. It requires a lot of support and everything, and it can take much longer. Sometimes if you can start with a clean slate, it's better to start with a clean slate. And most of organizations are more than happy and willing to start with a clean slate and work on that culture.
Yeah, I've seen that many, many times. And you have new leadership coming in and saying, hey, we're going to completely change the way that we're doing this. There's things that we're doing well. We want to leverage those things. But especially with the technologies, like, we're going to fundamentally change this and do this different. And it's, I mean, sometimes you know that you have, or that new leader has the support of the executive team, the founders, the CEO, whatever, because they're allowing them to come in and make that change. They're invested in, hey, part of hiring that person, bringing in that expert, is because they've been successful in doing it that other way. So it change for change sake is never great.
No, 100%. And I think if an organization's honest with you, if they're going out for recruitment and they need someone to come in, I think they understand if they're looking for that specific role. It's for either because they're doing it really well, which if I look at it and I go, okay, well, that might bore me a little bit. But if they're saying that there's a challenge, we're having, like, we're starting out our journey, or we've tried doing this journey, it's not worked out, and we're trying to revisit it, that's where it's like, okay, so is change needed? And they go, yes, because what's currently working is not working for us, or we're starting from scratch. And then that's where I go, oh yeah, that interests me a lot. That does.
Yeah. Well, it's the other side of it too, is that in operations management, again, I spent about half of my career in those types of roles, running operations teams and IT operations, and where you're continually looking at and assessing, what are we doing? Is this healthy? Is this the right way? Can it be done better? So even though you might be high performing, that's why I'm a big fan of, like, the maturity model in general. And there's maturity models on just about every system and types of organization, but you might be high performing, high functioning in some areas and below average in other areas. And so there's always, you're never done, because people change, technology changes, the business requirements change, all those things which can impact. Now, whether that you're interested in going through the constant, review and changing that up, there's something to be said about career progression, trying different roles, doing other things, moving around, not just staying someplace. But there's some people that just absolutely love that space.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Again, I've had that experience before and I really enjoy it myself. And when, especially now, I think tech over the last few years, we always say, I think it's a repetitive comment here, we say that tech's growing so much and it's changing so rapidly. And we say that so often. And then over the last 12 months, we've even seen a massive, rapid change. Yeah. And everyone, execs, engineering managers and all that, all talking about, oh, how do we add AI, or how do we embrace AI, and how does AI impact us? And you're like, oh, that's another change. And we know that over the next few months, over the next few years, that there's going to be something else, or the growth in these areas, where we're working on, especially with Microsoft products, for example, where they're moving a lot of their power platforms, over to like more of a fabric, the new fabric platform, and that's a change, even though it doesn't look massively changeable. But from a organization operational side of things, it's like, well, this changes is more ingrained into Azure, and you're like, how does this work? How does that work? And all that changes. Yeah, we
Yeah,
always.
it's interesting. So I joined my first SaaS software company in 2001, and what we went up against trying to sell customers and partners, bringing them in of the benefits of the cloud. It was a really tough sell back then. Joined Microsoft in 2006 at the beginning of what is now Office 365. Again, selling people on the cloud. And I was talking with Jeff Teper, president of Collaborative Apps at Microsoft, about the cloud journey. And he said he felt it wasn't until like 2015, 2016, when he felt like people finally clicked, like they got the cloud, they understood the benefits, and kind of the momentum was towards the cloud. I think the citizen developer stuff, the Power Platform stuff, sped up a lot of that. But you're right. I think all of that, I mean, that was 15, 16 years of that change. And over the last 12 months with generative AI, I mean, we're seeing just shockwaves. Like, I don't think we've ever seen change this fast. Because even with the advent of the internet, I mean, that was a slow crawl to get performance up to, we all had high speed internet. So this is just you're right. It just sounds like this throwaway phrase, like it's like change happens so fast or so much. No, it's the rate of change is speeding up.
And I think that these organizations like Microsoft, AWS and Google Cloud, they all compete, so they need to go first to market fast as possible. And they know, they've learned over the years and lessons learned, and we do this at our own organizations, but you learn from your previous experiences. And for something like an AI generative product, it was easier to go, we're going to give it to people for free to try. And then once you do that, people get using it, and there's a buzzword, and it gets loads of press about it. So this is all there. And then when you start releasing corporate and enterprise versions and go, okay, now you can build on it yourself, integrate it with your own products, and here's some sessions, and here's some free learning material, and oh, we're going to do loads of certifications, on that, so you can build up your engineers on it, and we can throw some experts for you, to help you get it all up to speed in your organization. 12 months, it's like the plan's been there for years. They knew what they're doing. We can say it's a marketing thing in regards to how they strategized it, and hit the market. And 100%, it is a marketing strategy, and it worked really well, getting everybody all trained up and all ready and talking about anything. But saying that, it's also how I see tech's moving forward now. This is where we'll see a day one announcement, and how within 12 months that is literally all we're talking about, and how people are scaling up on it, and how we need to evolve ourselves as engineers, operational IT individuals. We need to start learning so much quicker. So there's a massive impact on us and the content side of things. Even though we can learn from people like Microsoft, learn is how we need to learn from each other. We need to start sharing that information as well.
Well, that's what I'm most interested in. I think 2024 really is, we're going to start seeing the business application of the technology. We got the hype cycle, we got all the marketing push, we all bit hard on this idea of AI. We're playing with the various technologies. I'm paying for a couple different tools that are adding value. Like, I get it. The pricing, that now it's like the world is available. Everybody can get the Microsoft technology now. Like, Copilot is available to organ not just the 300 seat threshold, the enterprises. There's the, like, I've got my own instance. I've got the home version. My family have Teams and the product suite, the productivity suite, Office suite. And so now you can buy $20 a seat, get everybody in there, or just myself, on those tools that I'm using. As well as, organizations under 300 seats can get the enterprise at $30 a month as well. I mean, it's great to see that happen that quickly. But I'm most interested now in seeing the case studies, the examples. Here's what we actually did. So it's fine to go out there, like everybody suddenly is an expert in AI, but what are the actual real world examples? Like, James, I want to know how it's changing your job in the DevOps. I think some exciting stories that are going to come out of there, how you're actually leveraging that on a day to day. So that's I think that's what we're going to see this year.
Yeah. And that's what I expect to show as well. Yeah. There's a lot coming out from other individuals. I've heard stories, I've experienced myself. I'm working with our own internal development team in using things like GitHub Copilot to actually speed up their coding delivery times, and helping them write test plans, and helping with documentation, which is a big thing in development. So those stories, I know, from my experience, are going to come out this year, and it's going to be amazing on those topics, as well as integrating them into business applications. And I imagine it will happen this year, but I do hope that we will see very soon from others, that, this is what we did, and this is how we did it, and this is how much of an impact it's made. At the moment, like you say, we bit hard on AI. Let's see the result from it.
I think that's just the next step in the adoption cycle. The next group of people need to see the data. They need to see the specific scenarios. They can't just be like, hey, we could use it this way. No, show me how this actually was used in these scenarios. And what are the data points? How much did it improve? And I think that's going to be 2024. It's going to be interesting. All of the marketing heavy presentations from last year are need to make the switch over to practical application and data.
Yes, 100%. I agree with that.
Well, it should be interesting. But James, really appreciate your time. Great connecting with you. For folks that want to connect with you, reach out. Where are you most active in social? Where can people find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn under James Cook. I'm also active on X/Twitter at Official Cook J. So either of those two platforms, you can contact.
Because of all the unofficial ones that are out there, with your face out there.
Yeah, I'm on so many socials. Yeah, trying to get away from certain platforms. Yeah, but it's still the dominant ones. So yeah, those two are where I am prominently. So if you contact me on any of those or follow me on any of those, you'll get all my latest updates.
Great. And of course, we'll have all the links to James' profile out on the blog post, out on YouTube, and out on the podcast. So James, thanks so much for your time.
No, thank you.